Blog Talk Radio.
My monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the car's release to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocky, all were digging the sound. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hound. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rack's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said,
whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Rack's a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what it said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you, my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
There's the Monster Mash. Happy Halloween to our listener. Obviously the first one, the show just ahead of Halloween, so I thought I'd make an effort, to be honest with you. And I like that because it epitomizes Halloween for me. I mean, forget Killer Clowns and all that nonsense. A little bit of Monster Mash, which is pretty awesome. And yeah, a shout out to our listener, Mitch Workman, out there in listener land. Awesome editor. He's just edited my latest offering, which will be out on Jaded Books Publishing very, very soon. It's a double bill Zaro. So watch out for that and buy one if you're listening, because Christmas is coming up and I don't have to tell the kids that Santa's died again this year. So on, hopefully Xtina's on the other line. Are you there, my dear?
I am.
Have you told your kids that Santa's died yet? I mean, it's,
no, I would never say that to them. That's awful.
Them the Tooth Fairy committed suicide, so, you know, no more dollars
for
you.
I did have that story about the Tooth Monster, but I've never said anything bad about Santa. You know, I just talk bad about the Tooth Fairy.
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's difficult when you have small children. You know, on one hand, you teach them stranger danger. You're teaching them, you know, be careful of people, certainly people you don't know. Although, statistically speaking, more children actually assaulted by people they do know. And then on the other hand, you know, you're saying, well, you know, you go to sleep early and this guy is going to come down the chimney and creep into your room and leave presents. I don't know.
Well,
as a parent, what do you do? Where do you go with that?
The toothbrush is even scarier. You know, they're digging under the child's pillow while they sleep. That's pretty scary if you think about that.
Well, you know, when you say fairies, for me, I think Tinkerbell, who, to be fair, is a bit of a hottie. Santa is a big,
right.
He's a big guy in a red Coca-Cola red suit and a beard.
apparently
only comes once a year. So, you know, there's all that pent-up energy there.
Oh, God, I knew you were going to
You know,
do
from
that.
The off. I think my little girl's just, she's at that cusp at the moment where... I know my son went through this about this age, where they start to keep the Santa myth going for the parents. They kind of know what's going on, but they don't want to spoil it for mum and dad. You know, and you have that sort of awkward that time, which is sort of a transition time between, you know, them putting the pretense up and you. And let's just tell it how it is, you know. But I think this will be our last year of Santa Claus with her, which will be. It'll be sad, to be honest with you, because but then again, you know, you get the kids, you know, Santa's brought me all these nice presents and you miserable bastards have got me nothing, you know.
Right?
we've had
that's
that
true.
what did you get me, you fat bastard? Well, Santa, you know, so I just hate my kids, to be honest with you. So
yeah, I don't like mine too much either.
I just don't. You know, as a general rule, I do not like children. I love mine. I love them. Sometimes I don't like them, but I do love them. But other people's kids, no. No, I can't.
Right. I don't even like mine too much most of the time. I really don't. You know, my son is 12 now and he's turning into a little monster, and then my daughter's 18, and of course she knows everything and I know nothing. So that's you know.
Well, we've all been 18. But hey, we have one hell of a show this evening. We're starting off with Alistair Cross. He's going to be talking to us, amongst other things, and his book, The Angel Alejandro. You see, I did pronounce that correct. I know to pronounce that thanks to Lady Gaga, obviously enough. But
right. Me too.
It's a great song. Great song. I hate the faux accent she puts on at the beginning, but it's a good song. Alistair obviously has his own blog radio show as well, so it's Best Behaviour. You know, I'm wearing a suit, this dinner suit, and a dickie. I've got my dickie.
me too. I got a cocktail.
You know, you've got your dickie out as well.
My cocktail gown. Yes.
So, how are we doing so far, Alistair?
Hello, I'm good. Hello. How are you?
We're good. Are we doing okay? I mean, sorry, we are not worthy. I mean, you are the grand master at blog radio, and we're sort of the new kids, and we're a bit starstruck here, you know.
I think that your banter beforehand is really fun, and I was actually thinking, you know, we ought to do something like that, because, you know, I pretty much just, you know, jump right into it and just start reading. Hello, welcome to the show, everybody. And I also wanted to say, you know, congrats on saying Alejandro right. That's a tough one, but I think I learned from the Lady Gaga song too. So
there you go. So it's great to have you on the show. So Dina, be quiet, please. Be quiet. You know,
she's
started already. It's because she's not had a drink normally. Normally, Alice, you get a bit of a break between sips. You know, at some point, she's going to stop talking to have a drink of wine so I can get a word in. Tonight, she doesn't have any wine, unfortunately, so we're going to have to sort of jump in and try and get around this.
Around,
you know? Yeah, could we? But thank you. Hey, thank you for joining us. It's an honour and a pleasure. You know, I know you're probably sick to death of being on the radio, but it's great of you to join to talk about. So, okay, we'll get straight into it now. The Angel Alejandro. When he says coming later this year here, when is it actually going to be available?
This is probably going to be available. I was hoping for a late 2016 release, but it ended up being really, really big, like almost 200,000 words big.
Wow.
And so it's getting edited down. I need to get it down, I need to cut a lot. And so it's going through a really rigorous editing process. So I'm guessing it's going to be January or February of 2017. That's the best I can,
wow.
I can guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it should be. It'll be by then. It'll be a normal size, so that's good.
so you're planning to hack it down to what 120,000? I mean, it's still going to be a mighty tome. I mean, how do you decide what you're going to cut out? I mean, from you slice it in half. How do you decide?
Well, it's for one thing. I tend to write long, meaning I. When I go back, the first thing I do is I start looking at ways to shorten sentences. You know, it's like, is there a more concise way of saying this? Because I pretty much, you know, that first draft is pretty much just, primitive. It's just, I just go with it. And then after you tighten some sentences and stuff like that, you start looking at, scenes. Does this go anywhere? You know, worst case scenario, character threads. Are there too many characters? Is there anything that can go? And in this case, there are no character threads that really need to be cut. They all go somewhere and they all count. So it's really about tightening sentences and cutting, shortening some scenes. I think I've managed to cut out a few scenes. So it's. You know, you just kind of have to look at it, and it's just kind of like cutting out whatever isn't absolutely necessary, which, you know, that's the way I think that a good book should be, you know, anyway, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm dying to know what it's all about. I mean, just reading the I've got a sneaky preview of the excerpt you'll be reading out for us later, and the tagline, "The devil is in the details." I mean, so you're going to have to, what's it all about? I need to know. I want this book.
Well,
if I'm going to have to wait till January, I need to know more now.
All right. the idea is basically underneath everything else, it's a story about balance and order. And basically, an angel falls out of the sky. He doesn't actually fall out of the sky. He's rescuing someone, and you know, I got this idea because you hear these stories about people who, you know, had near-death experiences and they claim that they saw an angel or whatever. So I kind of thought, well, what would happen if somehow you dragged that angel, you know, from their realm over to this realm? You know what? You know, and then on a bigger scale, what would that mean in terms of the world? So I thought, okay, so this angel gets dragged from his realm over to this one, and in so doing, he loses his memory because, you know, it's you can't, you know, it's the same thing as us. We don't remember anything, you know, of what happened before we were born or after we die, and so I figure that it's probably a similar situation for them. So he gets pulled over to this side, and with it, he loses all memory of who he is and what he is. And so he's really naive. He's really doesn't know a lot of modern things. And then I started thinking, what would that mean, you know, on a bigger scale? And I started thinking, well, if an angel came over and he what if he was inadvertently healing people, fixing things, not knowing what he was and not doing it on purpose, then that would upset the natural balance, which would create a kind of free for all in you know, for the other side, the demons. So once the demons get word that there's an angel, you know, on earth that doesn't know what he is, you know, they're kind of free to do whatever they want. So then the demons come to town, and it's just they're looking for, you know, they're taking souls along the way, so it's kind of about this whole town that becomes, you know, slowly corrupt, and in the meantime, they're trying to get to him, because if they can get his soul, you know, while he doesn't know what he is, that's pretty valuable to them. So, long story short, it's about good versus evil. It's about balance, cosmic balance.
Wow. So it's a classic tale of good versus evil, but if the world itself is at stake, that's awesome. Yeah, I like the idea of the angel being all too often. I mean, certainly with horror, you know, I'm guilty. You know, it's devils and demons and creatures of the netherworld. But you know, bringing an angel into it, I think is clever. I like that. I might steal that idea, sir.
You can.
I don't think I could get 200,000 words out of it, but you know, it's worth a go. Worth a go. No, I like that. I like sort of, you know, take the cliches, take the well trodden path, and put a twist on it. I mean, would you say that's a common theme with your writing?
Sure, because you know, I mean, there are the basic horror tropes that you know that I grew up with and that you know are a part of my you know consciousness and so to take them, to take any idea and kind of take it a step further or to say you know how do I put a fresh you know spin on this, you know that's really where the creative part of writing really comes in and you know it's also craft but it's also art in that way finding the new way of doing something because you know the truth of the matter is it's all been done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they say there's the old adage that there's nothing new, but obviously there's a bit of a twist on something else. But
right.
You know, I'm a big I hate cliches. You see that. I mean, you know, even you know out of the independent horror realm, which we all sort of. Hang around in, you know, you Stephen King's, even Clive Barker. I mean, they will all touch on cliches from time. And, oh, you know, you spot them coming a mile off.
Cliche is a good, you know, it can be a good, you know, tool if you want to create an immediate connection, I guess. But for the most part, yeah, you have to find, you know, fresh new ways of doing it.
Oh, definitely.
And
yeah, I mean,
rough.
Yeah.
Now, Alistair,
go on, Xtina, you can talk
you.
Now.
Yeah, I know.
Go on.
I wanted to ask you, Alistair, about your show, and you've had some amazing guests, and one of them, which I was totally fangirling over, was John Saul. Now, I have to ask, what's your favorite John Saul book?
My favorite John Saul book, hands down, without question, is Suffer the Children. And
it was a good one. Oh. Yes.
Yeah, I remember reading that a long time ago.
It was the first John Saul book that I read. And you want to hear the coolest thing ever? When we asked him to be on the show, we were emailing him and talking to him and corresponding, and he personally emailed me the first draft of Suffer the Children. It was amazing.
Oh, wow.
It's just so cool.
Wow.
It was so cool seeing, like seeing all
I'm
the editing
so
marks
jealous.
On it. He was one of the writers that really, there were three writers that really got me thinking I want to do this. And it was John Saul, Dean Koontz, and my collaborator, Tamara Thorne. I started reading these guys in the late 90s when I was, you know, I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I was just so struck by this, and I was like, this is what I want to do. And Suffer the Children was the first John Saul book that I read, and it's my favorite, maybe because it's my first, I don't know, I love them all, but it's just an incredible book.
Yeah, I think that for me, definitely Suffer the Children was right up there. But my all-time favorite for some reason was The Unloved. I just...
Oh, I know, right? That's the
that
one. Next one I read. That's the very second one that I read. Total toss-up.
So, but he's had so many good ones. But, I think I have like four that I've read over and over again. And this is interesting for me. As many times as I've read The Unloved, when you get to that moment, you know, of the twist, for some reason, I forget it's coming every time. And every time I'm like, oh my God, every time.
That's because John Saul is truly a master of lulling you into a sense of security. And you just get lost in the rhythm of his words.
Yeah.
You get lost in the, and then all of a sudden, you know, boom, you know, I totally agree. I totally know what you're saying.
I adore him. He was definitely, I even liked him, I think, better than Stephen King because I felt that I could just, You could get into John Saul's books a little better, I always thought, than Stephen King. Sometimes it took, you know, chapter after chapter. And Stephen King was always a great storyteller, that's true. But, you know, there were many times I was reading it going, is there a point? You know, is there, you know, where is this going? And John Saul always started you right out, and you knew what was happening. You knew what was going on, and there was always a sense of, something's going to happen. You're just not sure what it is, you know. And I just always loved his books. So I have to say that I was very jealous that you had him on your show.
I was jealous that we had him on the show. I was so excited. I was like, you know, something's going to go wrong. It's just, you know, and it didn't. Right. And it was great. And he is one of the nicest people I've met. I mean, truly. I mean, it's not like we've, you know, they've all been nice, but it's just my you know, I've just been fanatical about him for a long time, so it was kind of special in that way. He's one of those people who is everything that you hope that they would be.
I was also really, really interested in when you had the, I can't remember his name, the guy who writes for VC Andrews,
Andrew Niederman, yeah.
Yes. Oh, see,
yeah,
I was a huge fan of VC Andrews when I was younger.
Yeah.
You know, Flowers in the Attic, that whole series I just loved, and My Sweet Audrina. I was totally fangirling over that.
Yeah, he was. We've had him on a couple of times, and he gave us a little blurb. He endorsed our novel Mother, which was like, that was like really, really cool, because it's like, you know, he's really cool too. It's amazing. And he also wrote the Devil's Advocate, you know, the movie with Keanu Reeves. And
oh my goodness, I did not know that.
Yep. He's a man of many. He's kind of all over the place. Like, he's V.C. Andrews, but he's a lot more too, you know.
right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I hate to put you on the spot. No, I don't really hate it, but do you have a reading for us?
I can do that, yes.
You know he does. You know, smoke and mirrors.
I know.
I've been reading it. I've been sat reading it.
It's my favorite part.
It's awesome. It is awesome.
All right.
I want to hear this.
All right. So this is from the Angel Alejandro. And this is, just to set it up a little bit, Madison O'Reilly is the protagonist. And she has gone to the new nightclub in town with her best friend, Det, Bernadette. She calls her Det. This is the nightclub that was started by the head demon that followed Alejandro into town. And they're using this club as kind of a means of really getting under the skin of the locals. But anyway, after seeing some of the unspeakable and horrific things that go on in this club, Madison is ready to leave. And Det has had way too much to drink. She's passed out in the car, and on her way out, Madison is accosted by a young man named Clint Horace of the Prominence Police Department, and he has a definite fascination with Madison. All right, so Clint Horace's eyes smoldered. His hands were white fists at his side. His jutting Adam's apple quivered. Even his zits looked pissed. But Madison would show no fear. Go home, Clint. She stood firm, arms crossed, but inside a thousand earthquakes shivered, threatening to turn her self-control to dust. Clint stepped close and loomed over her, an intimidation tactic they'd no doubt taught him in police academy. It's that guy, isn't it? That freak-tard that's been staying with you. He turned you against me, didn't he? No one had to turn me against you, Clint. You did that all by yourself. Bullshit. He stepped closer, and Madison pressed herself against the red Mustang. That's bullshit, and you know it. We had a good time. No, you had a good time. Or you almost did, anyway. Clint's mouth became a hard line. Are you saying you didn't want it? Madison turned from his fetid breath. You know I didn't. He leaned in, caging her against the car. Liar. Madison glanced into the Mustang where Det was slumped, drunk and unconscious in the passenger seat. Clint crossed his arms. You don't think she's going to save you, do you? That dumb slut drank herself half dead. And where does that leave you? No debt, no freak-tard, no one around but you and me. A slimy, crooked grin settled on his mouth. Did you have anything to drink tonight? Maybe I should make you suck on the breathalyzer. I haven't had a drop. He shrugged. I can still make sure you lose your license. Clint, please, just stop. Then act like a grown woman and finish what you started. He rubbed himself against her. I didn't start anything, Clint, and if you don't lay off, I'll call the police. I am the police, you fucking cocktease. Clint, Another laugh, riding the still waves of garlic and beer. Is that why you wore that slinky little skirt and that tip-popping pink blouse on our first date? The slinky skirt he spoke of had been an ankle-length peasant skirt. As for the tip-popping blouse, Madison didn't even know what that meant. She'd been very mindful of how she'd dressed for their one and only evening together, and it hadn't been a date. They'd gone bowling, for Christ's sake, and only after months of Clint's endless hounding. I didn't mean to give you the wrong idea, Clint. It wasn't like that, not for me. His lips pursed into an angry little knot. Bullshit. You wanted it then, and you want it now. No, Clint, I didn't, and I don't. His eyes did a crazy little dance over her face. What makes you think you're better than me, Mads? I don't think that. Yes, you do, and it's ridiculous. Because who do you think is going to make all those old parking tickets go away? But they're not even mine, they're my mom. He shrugged. Makes no difference. I can make sure you're responsible for them. But I like you, Madison. I can make them go away just as easy. It's up to you. He leaned in close and ran a knuckle down her breast. Fear turned to fury. Fuck you. She spat. Clint jerked back, a wad of saliva running down his cheek, his mouth a maw of disbelief. You bitch. He slapped her, hard. Her head rocked, and pain exploded up the side of her face. Clint dragged her to the front of the Mustang, spun her around, and shoved her into a bent-over position, slamming her face onto the hood. She kicked, flailed, and writhed, but he was surprisingly strong. She screamed, but at the far end of the parking lot and over the music from the club, no one would hear her, and Det was still out cold. He wedged a knee between her legs, prying them apart as he tore at her leggings. Get off me. Clint took a fistful of her hair. Shut up. He punctuated each word with a head slam onto the hood. Stars exploded with each blow. Bone-crunching, teeth-clacking pain rang out. She bit her tongue and tasted blood. Her body went slack. Blackness tiptoed at the edges of her vision. Wavering between awareness and unconsciousness, she heard the clinks as Clint unbuckled his belt, the zip as his fly came down, the sound of his jeans hitting the asphalt. Head spinning, face bleeding, she was helpless to stop him. This is it, she thought. This is how it ends. Then she saw the streak of light. It blazed across the sky like a blade cutting the fabric of the night. It was just like what she'd seen the day she fell from the roof, before Alejandro had come. What the fuck? Clint released his painful grip on her. Madison, her head clearing, managed to right herself. She gasped as Alejandro landed in a crouch on the asphalt, his hand a fist on the ground, his body tense, absorbing the shock. Aside from his boxers, he was nude, his muscles bunching and bulging with power. He looked up, and his eyes were impossibly silver, savage, mad. Oh, my God. Madison made a move toward him, but froze as great black wings shot out, spreading open behind him, their tips lit with curling flames. I'm hallucinating, she thought. This isn't real. Plumes of frost exploded from Alejandro's nostrils. He looked like a bull about to charge. Clint stumbled back. The wings retracted, disappeared, and in a single fluid move, Alejandro was on his feet, advancing on Clint with impossible speed. With one arm, he struck hard. The sound was bone on bone. Clint flew, hit the asphalt, skidding on his back, pants around his ankles. Before he found his feet, Alejandro had him by the scruff, lifting him easily off the ground, and slammed him down again. Stop, Madison screamed. You'll kill him. Alejandro tossed Clint around ragdoll style. It looked like something from a video game. Stop. But Alejandro did not stop. He shoved the cop onto his stomach, drove a knee into his back, and held his head against the ground, cheek to tarmac. Clint's eyes were wild and dazed as Alejandro pressed his weight onto him with a knee. Madison glimpsed Clint's bare ass, a scraped, bloody mess that reminded her of ground beef, and she cringed at the probability that his front side now suffered the same fate. You will leave now. Alejandro's voice reminded Madison of a fire-hot blade, a sound that could both lacerate and incinerate. It terrified her. You will leave. You will go home, and you will never speak to Madison or even look at her again. He shoved Clint's face into the ground. Do you understand me? Clint tried to nod. Alejandro palmed Clint's head, lifted it, then smacked it down on the blacktop. Clint screamed as his cheekbone surely shattered into 1,000 pieces.
Wow. Awesome stuff. Thank you.
Oh, wow. I was waiting
Thank
for you,
you
to keep going.
You just, I thought, yeah, well, because I'd actually read ahead. I knew that, yeah, what a shame it finished there. But that's
yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. That was very good. Thank you. Love it.
We're going to have you back just to read for like an hour. We can do that, right, James?
We'll do a 2-hour show and just have Alyssa reading for the whole 2 hours. I think that'll be awesome.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I would love that.
Your ratings will be through the roof.
Hey, whatever it takes.
Oh, I hate that our time is up right now. I hate it so much. Will you come back and see us, Alistair?
Yep, I absolutely will. I am pleased to have come, and I had a good time, and you guys are a lot of fun, and I will come back anytime.
Yay,
awesome. And,
thank you so much.
do feel free to invite us onto your show as well. We could
absolutely. We
don't get chance.
Way out. I was telling Xtina that we're booked way out, but yep, we
well, hey, you know, we're not going anywhere. I mean, it might be nice for us to be guests for a change.
yeah, it's a nice change.
Somebody else
did
all the hard work.
You guys would be great. Yeah.
Yeah, we do come as a double act now. We're sort of like, you know, the horror radios, Abbott and Costello.
Oh God.
I'm not. You decide who's who. I'm not. It's, you know, it's a toss up, really.
Oh,
I'll
God.
Just keep that to myself. No.
Oh, thank you very much, Alistair. And I will definitely be stalking you on Facebook again to have you come back, okay?
All right, no problem.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Alistair. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, we're going to have a musical interlude for, you know, the usual reasons. The old bladder, obviously. and then we will be right back after this. This is a golden oldie from what was my favourite band growing up in the 70s. One of the few sort of, you know, popular musicians of the 70s who's not actually doing time for child molestation in England at the moment. So mostly because they're all dead. they probably escaped Operation Yew Tree. So here's the sweet. So I just had to wait till the explosion bit was finished at the end. Probably one of the best songs from the 70s. That was sweet. Look them up. I don't know if they made it big over here in the States, but they were awesomely big and huge back in the good old days. I'm sounding old now. I'm sounding old, but yeah, brilliant. Give them a listen. Called The Sweet. That was Hellraiser. Obviously, kind of appropriate, bearing in mind we're racing towards Halloween. Next, Tina, I guess you're looking forward to Halloween.
I am. Being a horror lover, I can't say that it's my favorite holiday. That's awful because I'm a Christmas girl. You know, I go insane over Christmas. But yeah, I love Halloween. I love the scary movies. As a matter of fact, I was just looking up some movies the other day because, you know, this is the time of year when you listen or when you watch freaking scary movies. I couldn't find anything good. I was like, what the hell? You know, I want some good scary movies, and I couldn't find a damn thing. So that kind of sucked. But and I always make it a point to watch the Halloween remakes, the Rob Zombie's Halloween remakes on Halloween. So that's definitely a tradition for me. I can't wait to do that. I love those movies.
Well, obviously a recent tradition because it's not been out long. So, you know. Don't keep it up. You know, he's showing off now.
For a while. I can't remember.
So,
how
before,
long now,
before we, hey, you need to give a shout out to our sponsors, otherwise we'll be in trouble. I'll let you do that now before we bring Adam on. Otherwise, we'll be sacked. We'll be sacked.
Okay, check out Databooks Publishing's website to learn more about their authors and upcoming releases at www.jadedbookspublishing.com. And Databooks Publishing is accepting submissions for their seasonal anthology for December, Slashing Through the Snow. Any type of holiday that is celebrated around Christmas time is accepted. Please see their Facebook page for submission guidelines. The deadline for that is November 15th. You can find James at his website, www.jameslongmore.com. And I have an author page on the Jaded website, which is www.jadedbookspublishing.com. And don't forget to follow the Panic Room Radio Show on social media, our Facebook page, Unofficial Panic Room Radio Show, Twitter at Panic Room Radio, our YouTube channel, The New Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com. Yay!
Awesome. I think you remembered everything. Well done. That was great. Yay. It was awesome. Brilliant. Brilliant. Well done.
About time.
have a coconut macaroon. Which is, sorry, I'm not sure if that translates or not. It's a kind of, I was going to say biscuit, but obviously biscuits are different here. A cookie. Although it's not, I still get confused. I've been here 6 years and I ask for biscuits and I get, what are scones really? And I ask for chips and I get crisps. And I go, no. Stop here, you know. It's just, I think my wife brought me here just to confuse me.
That's what we do.
Well, she had it all to put up with when we lived together in England. You know, she would ask for stuff, and people just the minute she opened her mouth, you know, and obviously she had an accent. I mean, Yorkshire, you know, it's kind of a xenophobic. It's kind of a mini Texas, actually, kind of a xenophobic county. And anybody who doesn't sound Yorkshire, i.e. like me, people just stare openly at her. But, you see, I get that now. I get people looking at me like I'm, you know, just been beamed down from the mothership, you know. I don't know. It's funny enough, actually, I've just been watching American Horror Story Season 6, and the Kathy Bates character, the Butcher, obviously, again, they did really well. For once, they've not got settlers speaking in American accents, because obviously that wouldn't happen. But she's doing her very best at, I think, what is meant to be a Yorkshire accent. Listen, give it a listen. It's entertaining.
Yeah.
It is entertaining.
I like the first couple of that show, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's a good season. They sort of like. They got to sort of episode 6. It's wrapped up. Where now? But they put a twist on it, and it's running. And I'm really enjoying. I think I'm enjoying it better than the previous one. It's good. It's got me thinking. I'd recommend it. I'd watch it. It's my current. That and Black Mirror. If you get the chance, a Netflix original. Get a chance to watch Black Mirror. It's kind of like the Twilight. It's like a modern Twilight Zone, but with a technological twist. But anyway, I'm not getting paid to plug Netflix, so I'm going to stop now. We have our next guest coming up, who is Adam Rees. He's going to be talking to us about his book Deadly Demons, which was out on November. Oh, sorry, it's coming out on November the 15th. Great tagline: dripping with gore that you adore. So I think we're in for a bit of a treat with you,
right,
Adam. Hopefully, AT&T willing. He's there. Adam, are you with us?
Yes, I am here.
Adam!
Hello!
What is going on?
What is going on? Well, AT&T haven't let us down. I'm touching wood this week. I have an ongoing thing with AT&T on account of the fact that they're crap. The only reason I've not dumped them is because I've got so much stuff on my DVR. I couldn't ever hope to catch up. Look at about 4 years worth of NCIS that I know I'm never going to watch, but you don't want to get rid of it, do you? Because you never know. We might get to a point in my life where there's nothing on except a four-year-old rerun of NCIS. And
you sound like me, like hoarding reruns, man.
It forces you to have a clean out every now and then. Do I really need to keep sort of episode, 164 of The Simpsons? I know off by heart now, you know.
Oh, come on. You can't get rid of those.
Yeah, but they rerun them on Fox FXX literally every week. Every week. Hey, we're running all 600 episodes again. It's good background telly. It's good background. So how are you, Adam? How are you today, sir?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I've been trying to keep awake, trying to get some drinkage down, doing the same old, same old.
Are we talking drinkage or energy drinks to keep you awake? Because you just find drinking alcohol
earlier.
Earlier
I had energy drinks. Right now I'm just having rum. I mean, that's my choice of drink right now. So
yeah, I like it. I like a bit of rum.
I think this is the first week that I haven't been sipping on wine while I do the show. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, though. You'll have to tell me later, James, if I'm,
I'm too much of a gentleman to say on air.
We can
discuss that later.
I've noticed you've been a little quiet tonight. You haven't been as, usually on all your shows. You're very talkative. Tonight you just can kind of, fade away a little bit. What's going on?
You're saying I need to drink more.
I'm actually getting to speak, which is nice. Normally, I toddle off. I go watch Simpsons reruns while she's blathering on. Xtina's got this. I'm going. I'll be here for the end. I'll wrap up at the end.
You've got that warm and pleasant accent. I love it, man. I dig it.
That's why I keep him around. That's why I keep him around.
That's good. I mean, he definitely has the voice. I mean, I sit here and I listen, and I'm just like, man, I wish I had an accent like that. But nope.
I say that almost every show. I do. Sometimes we'll have people, everybody has an accent but me, and I get jealous. And then, of course, I can't remember. 2 weeks ago we had, and I know she's a friend of yours, Adam, that's why I want to bring her up, Alaska Angelini we had on. And, oh, my goodness, I loved her. She had the most adorable voice. And I'm reading her 24690, and it's so good.
Oh, my gosh, it is good. She is an amazing author. I'll tell you what, if you haven't read Whiteout yet, blew me away.
Yeah,
I just about smacked my face against a wall.
Yeah, when she talks about 24690, she says that before you, I guess when you hit the 50% mark is when it gets pitch black, and I think I'm at 45% right now. So I'm like, God, what's gonna happen? What can go wrong? What can get
worse?
You're gonna
be chugging that wine later.
Oh God. It's really good though. She's excellent. I can't wait to keep going. I mean, every night, that's what I look forward to. I get to read more, So I definitely can't wait. And she, I can't wait to have her back. She was an awesome guest too. So, but I wanted to bring her up because I knew that, you know, that you're a friend of hers and stuff. She was just adorable. And we were talking about voices, and I thought she had like the most adorable voice. So, okay,
oh,
am I talking?
She's my girl. She's amazing.
Yeah. Sorry, I've tuned you out, Xtina, to be honest with you. Just,
oh.
Only joke. You know,
you're going to pay for all this later.
I could sit and listen to you talking for, well, I do sit and listen to you talking for an hour most Thursday nights, to be honest. But
and you love
about,
every minute of it.
how about letting Adam get a word in? So, Adam, Deadly Demons, tell us more, sir.
Deadly Demons is actually the second book to the Triple D series, and it's about a writer who kind of reveals his secrets behind his novels, and most of the books he writes are like erotic horror, just like me, and the thing is, he lives this life that everybody would think he's like one of those peachy king, nice guys or whatever, but he actually has a darker and sinister side to him that he actually puts his trophies in his own books. So it's an interesting
awesome.
Book. I love it. I absolutely love the character Nathan Andrews. He's been like a piece of me through this whole process. So I love the guy.
Awesome.
So again, tread carefully. I mean, I'm reading the excerpt here. You know, tread carefully. So he's based on you, is what you're saying, yeah?
No, well, I mean, his his personality, like, I wouldn't say he's based on me. I would say, like, there were some people who pissed me off in the past that brought him out of me. But it's more of, like, I guess personality-wise, like, a little bit, but I would never hurt a fly. I'll just say that. I would never do anything to hurt anybody. It's just fiction, and that's it. You know, it was just something that popped up in my mind one day when I was drinking a little shot glass of rum. It just went on from there. My drink is full.
So, I can't wait to get to my favorite part of the night. So, so do you have a reading for us, Adam?
Yes, I do.
Yay. One of these times,
so,
you know,
like,
go ahead.
Say what?
I said one of these weeks, a guest is going to be like, no, what are you talking about? No, I don't.
No, yeah. No, read it.
No,
and
I
we
don't
have,
tell
we
you
have,
what
we have
I wrote.
The one guy. So we did have the one guy
yeah.
who said, no, read it yourself. He said, okay.
Well, you know, I'm excited to read it because I have a lot of readers who have been really excited to just know a little bit about this story, the next part of it. So it's really exciting for me, and it's really exciting just to see all the readers, like, pumped up for it. So, yeah, I have a reading for you guys. I mean, it's not long, but it's, you know, it gets the point across on the extent to the story, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, go for it, sir. Go for it.
All right, here we go. I bring the blade over her navel and watch it plunge into her stomach. A smear, thick string of crimson flips back onto my chest. The splatter expands across my neck and shoulders. This forces pleasure to ride up through my cunt, watching her be chopped up into bits. Her organs push against her abdomen as I pull the saw back toward me. A string of intestines come out with the belt and teeth. I can't help but notice the mess I'm making. I don't want to spend my whole day cleaning this bitch's blood off the floor. My attention goes to her neck, and I finish severing her head. Each glide of the saw is rough and rips her apart more than I expect. It's like trying to tear across a dotted line but constantly keep fucking up, leaving those annoying shredded pieces to hang. I can't complain, though. It is nice to see her jaw twist backwards with each thrust. It's what I've always wanted to do to her lying fucking mouth. When I see her hollow gaze staring at me, the moment feels so much sweeter, although it may just be in my head. I cut through her neck, watching her cheek roll toward Corey. It's like she's speaking to me even after death. I need to stop wasting time and finish cutting these two up before I turn this place into my own fucked up playpen. When I finish, I admire my work. The pools of maroons spread across the floor to the walls, and the bed is covered in blood. This is the perfect moment for my obsessive compulsive disorder. I'll have this place clean within a matter of hours. Hopefully, Nathan will appreciate my efforts to get everything clean so we can spend time together. It's nice to be in silence with him. Reaching for a few black trash bags, I pick up each limb from the floor and shove it into the bag. The more I add to the weight, the harder it is for me to transport these damn things. Without hesitation, I let the bags rest on the floor and head up the stairs. I need a break from all this. I'm sure Nathan won't mind helping me bleach the basement since he is a serial killer and all. When I reach the top of the stairs, I walk across the length of the living room back to the bedroom. My body is a mess again, and I don't want Nathan to think I've been paddling around in a pool of Mandy's blood all day. I get into the shower, feeling the warm water hit my skin. The heat feels comforting with the curls of steam rising from the floor. Pink spirals move down my abdomen to my thighs until finally resting at the bottom of the shower. The grittiness from the pieces of flesh and the blood clings to my hair. Scratching my scalp, it feels nice to get my friends off me. It's odd, though. Shouldn't I feel sick, regretful, or scared for murdering them? Why does this feel normal? I can taste the sweet revenge on my wet lips. Nathan is revealing my true self with each lustful whisper from his novels. I feel a connection to so enthralling, its dark mystic wonders into the shadows of my dreams. And I'm loving every single word of it.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yes, he certainly gives you a flavor.
He wouldn't hurt a fly. Oh, my gosh.
Mm.
Say what?
and he said he was a nice guy, and he wouldn't hurt a fly. And then he writes that, and wow.
Yeah, I would never hurt anybody. It's just, you know, the thing is with this book, there's two points of view. There's Adriana's point of view, and then there's Nathan's point of view. So you get both the male and female perspective on everything. And this was Adriana's point of view because she really fascinates me with who she is and what she thinks. She's like a hidden bookworm, I guess you can say. So I love her to death, but, you know, we'll see what happens with this book, you know.
Wow.
It certainly sets the tone. I mean, it's brutal stuff, but it's incredibly well written. I was living it, to be honest.
I was hoping
I would get that reaction because since it's Halloween, you know, it's all about the, you know, gore and living in the moment and, you know, feeling all these like, ooh, uncomfortable feelings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
It's the time of year that we face our fears, which is.
Oh yeah, definitely. I've been playing in the woods with a bunch of clowns the last couple of days, so you know.
Oh my God.
So it's you. You're the guy doing behind all that, yeah.
Well, I'm a good guy, or I try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is out middle of the sort of 15th of November, yeah. So a couple of weeks ago, and then we can all have. Where will we be able to find it?
You'll be able to find it on Amazon and Smashwords, and then I have it up on Goodreads for anybody who's going through there as well. So, I mean. Those are pretty much, it'll be on all the retail sites for anybody who's looking for it.
Yeah, all the usual places, yeah?
Yeah, the usual places, awesome. I mean, yeah, so it'll be fun. I'm ready to see how this goes and kind of nervous about it. I'm always nervous about these books because they're so intense for me when I write them. I've actually had to stop writing this one 4 different times because it's just too much for me. So.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's intense for me, so, but it's fun to write at the same time.
So,
yeah, no, I totally understand that. Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I'm always wondering, who do you like to read, Adam? Who do you?
Well, I'll say like my reading list goes from like science fiction to fantasy to horror, but. I read a lot of Stephen King. I love The Long Walk and Salem's Lot. Then Steve Alton, I read The Lock and the Meg series, and I'm a huge J.R.R. Tolkien fan with The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. So I have a very, I guess I read a lot of different things in different genres. So.
Right.
That's a broad spectrum. You know, which is good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it's good to. It's funny, actually. I mean, speaking to, obviously we speak to a lot of horror writers on the show. You know, the number, me included, that have a hidden passion, a secret passion almost for science fiction. You know, I in my early days, Heinlein and Ursula Le Guin, and you know, all the greats. You know, and not so much nowadays, but it's odd. But maybe that's sort of our first foot into horror and fantasy.
Right.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, it's like I know with my next book after this, you know, it's going to be more science fiction thriller, but that's where my heart's been for a long time, is science fiction and fantasy. I just started jumping into dark and horror this year, so this is very new for me right now.
So. Oh, go and enjoy your foray into horror. Funnily enough, I would love to be able to do science fiction, but I'm not. You know, I think I would struggle with it. I, just creating worlds and alternate realities and that, I think would be a stretch for me.
What?
Certainly now.
Well,
what? James,
the problem I have. So.
Colton, that was an alternate whole world there. What are you talking about?
I know that wasn't science fiction. No, it's science fiction. You know, it's technologies.
Okay,
there's just
fine.
So much going on. I just find just the idea just is daunting for me.
Hey,
yeah.
I totally get it, because with science fiction, it's so complicated. Seriously, I'm a dumbass, so I couldn't even write the amount of stuff that some of these guys write. So I totally get it.
You know, tonight has flown by. I mean, we just got on the air. I swear we did. But we're going to have to wrap it up. And Adam, will you come back and see us?
Oh yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed it with you guys.
Yeah, we need to give Adam his own show. We'll give you your own show. Yes.
Okay, that sounds good.
It's been an absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity. I really enjoyed it.
I'll be
stalking
you on Facebook.
And happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Honestly, it's happy, but that's flown by. That's all the time we have. And we're going to finish off with something appropriate, I think. So,
I hear
a fond farewell to our listener. Hopefully, we'll all survive. And we'll see you next week. Say goodbye.
Goodbye from the panic room.
Bye.